All right, this is becoming a SEC Media Days tradition.
Yeah, Trammell, that's right.
Tulsa World, how's it going?
Great, 2 years in a row. That's pretty cool.
And, you know, the million-dollar question last Media Days we asked you and every Oklahoma coverage, are the Sooners ready for the SEC? And clearly they were not.
Yeah, you know what? They weren't ready for the Big 12, I don't think. With that with that offense they had last year, they weren't ready for anything. So, you know, they went 6-7 in 22. So there's cracks in the foundation that they got to fix. Had a good year in 23, you know, getting ready to go into the SEC. But, yeah, they, you know, I think they acquitted themselves great defensively. Anytime we talked for 4 years about are they ready for the SEC, what everybody meant, including me, was are they ready defensively? When they answered that, they got that one figured out. It was the offense that, you know, just cratered. So I tend to think that offense is more easily fixed than defense. So maybe the recovery can be quick, but it won't be easy because there's so many good teams ahead of them. They think they got a good quarterback. They think they got a good offensive coordinator. They think they got an offensive line, but we don't know any of that, right? We don't know. John Mateer may be an all-star. We don't know. Best teams he's played so far is Boise State, Tech, Texas Tech, and Washington. And good programs, good teams, but that's 3 out of 12. That's not 9 out of 12. So we'll see. And, you know, the offensive coordinator, Ben Arbuckle, he's young. The offensive line's completely unproven. So this is not a finished product. It's not going to be a team that, I don't think, contends for the playoff, contends for coming back to Atlanta in December. But they should be better. It's going to be hard to be worse on offense.
Yeah, talk about putting a finger on a team. This is the one that it depends who's sitting in that chair. I've heard at the bottom of this league, and I've heard potentially at the top of this league. If it does take that big step forward, you mentioned the offensive line. You've talked Mateer. What are a few things that you think needs to fall in place for Oklahoma to have that success?
Well, they need the offensive line to just give them a chance. They need the receiving core to recover. You know, they did have some bad luck with the 5 receivers getting hurt, and they're playing with basically a whole new unit at receiver. I tend to think that wide receivers fall out of trees. I think it's the easiest position to fill in all levels of football. So that's not a great excuse because, you know, your 6th, 7th, and 8th receivers on a roster like Oklahoma ought to be functional at least, and turns out they really weren't. So that's not on – that's not on fate. That's on the Sooners. But I do, you know, if those guys can play better, and they've got, you know, some transfers, and they got Deion Burks back, so they've got some hope. So that's one place to look. Can those receivers get open and make plays? You know, the biggest problem with Oklahoma was they just couldn't have a big play. I mean, I can't remember the numbers, but 20 yards plus plays, I think they had 10 or 12, something like that, or maybe 13, like 1.1 a game. I mean, this is not 1946. You can't play football like that. You're not going to go 70 yards in 15 plays and score on somebody against anybody. You're not doing that in your rum-dum games. So they've got to get some big plays. And John Mateer hopefully can do that. Of course, they always have running backs. You never have to worry about that. But can the receivers make plays, and can the line give them some holes to run through to, you know, so the running backs don't have to break 5 tackles to make 20 yards and give Mateer time to throw the ball downfield? So those are the things. You know, and if they can just produce some big plays, that'll be a pressure valve that sort of gives the offense room to breathe and to grow. That was just it'd be like Major League Baseball. If you got any baseball fans out there that listen to the podcast, you know, you can't single your way to victory in the majors today. I mean, you're dead. And that's what OU had to try to do last year, and of course it didn't work.
What's your confidence level in Brent Venables as a head coach? We know he's a great defensive mind. You know, we can all second guess all these decisions, but Dylan Gabriel, that was odd last year. Jackson Arnold was here as Oklahoma's representative. How that handled was so poorly, I thought. And then kind of the one that I just can't get over is Zach Alley leaving to be West Virginia's defensive coordinator. That tells me it's very difficult to be Brent Venables' defensive coordinator. What do you make of Brent Venables, not the defensive coordinator, but as the head of Oklahoma football?
Yeah, it's still a mystery, and some of it's not a mystery. That's not good. But Oklahoma's tried to do some things to make him a better head coach, bringing in general manager Jim Nagy. You know, Brent doesn't have to do some of the auxiliary things that coaches forever have to do that not doing as much anymore because – of the portal in NIL, but you know some of the administrative duties. That's all. That's Jim Nagy. He's in charge of basically talent acquisition, high school and portal, with a team of scouts and you know the things that the coaches and their staff had to do in the old days. They don't at Oklahoma. They only are part of that process now. They're not, you know, they're not running the whole thing. That will help. He's got some really good analysts helping him out. You know, Kevin Wilson's back in Norman. I mean, this is a guy that's been the head coach in a Big Ten school and at Tulsa last couple of years, but also offensive coordinator on great Oklahoma teams, great Ohio State teams, Northwestern back when the Wildcats were starting to really, you know, flummox people with their offense. So Kevin Wilson's a great offensive mind. He's been through the iron. This is a guy that can give, I think, Brent a lot of advice and counsel and all those things, even help him on game day. So they're trying to do some things to make it easier on him because Brent, you want Brent around just for that defensive acumen. You know, they've been so inconsistent that people don't focus on just how bad – they don't remember and focus on the remarkable defensive turnaround because this defense was awful for so long, and Brent fixed it quick, and then he made it even better than that. So it's a remarkable defensive story. So you want somebody like that around, and if he's your head coach, you need to support him. But he is unproven. He does some things. He's not a great communicator. He talks too much. To be honest with you, none of us wants to hear an hour and 15-minute sermon. I mean, the churches where the guys are doing that are mostly empty. So that's what sort of some of the things he's got to work at. So. He's very unproven as a head coach. He's not unproven as a defensive coordinator.
Well, let me ask you, last time we were talking about Josh Heupel coming home.
Yeah.
And probably not what Oklahoma fans wanted to see in that showing, but now the new homecoming is Jackson Arnold.
Yeah.
So what are they saying over there, Norman, about that game?
Well, they don't have the fond memories of Jackson Arnold that they had of Josh Heupel, I can promise you. I would say that there's no really bad blood. I mean, people don't wish him bad other than they hope he loses when he comes to September 20th. It's just, for some reason, all the great hope. That's one of the cautionary things about John Mateer. The optimism for John Mateer is only a little bit higher than what the optimism was for Jackson Arnold. And frankly, the difference in those two is mostly the national and maybe even the conference perception. I mean, the Sooner fans were sky high on Jackson Arnold this time last year. And the first couple games, it didn't go very well. And you thought, well, what's going on? And then in game three, Tennessee, it just, fell apart. And he panicked, and it was a disaster. And, soon enough, he's not the quarterback. And he got the job back because Michael Hawkins wasn't ready. But it's just a bewildering story. And it reminds you that while some guys can do it early, the general story of college football, even in this era, is young guys really don't go great. Nico's a good example. Now, he didn't have the story of Jackson Arnold, but turns out Nico was just an okay quarterback as that, in his redshirt freshman year. He wasn't a superstar. It takes time, and we ask more and more of these guys. And it's very difficult. Oklahoma's been spoiled. Spencer Rattler was a redshirt freshman in 2020 and made All Big 12. He's first team All Big 12. And then 6 months later, 10 months later, he gets beat out because Caleb Williams is even better as a true freshman. That's not the norm. That's La La Land. Oklahoma happened to live in La La Land. But generally speaking, you have to develop quarterback. He has to be seasoned. That's where the portal is so valuable because you're getting a guy in who's ready to play. We'll see if John Mateer is. But Jackson Arnold, is not it's not to blame for that. He's just the victim of it. He's just not as good as quickly as people thought he was. I've been stunned. One of the things that struck me here, I don't know if you guys picked up on it, but, man, Brent Venables was awfully complimentary of Jackson Arnold. Most coaches, even if they feel that way, are not going to talk about it. They want to say, you know, I'm going to talk about the guys that are here. He's saying, you know, Jackson Arnold's going to play for a long time. You know, every OU fan at that point said, what league is that in? He's going to do that in. You know, there's the Arena League coming back or whatever. But he talked about Jackson's, you know, very lots of quality things about him. So Jackson Arnold still could become a good quarterback. There's not any question about that. I mean, Joe Burrow, Ohio State didn't seem to mind when he left. And LSU wasn't even crazy about him going into the 29 season. I mean, into the 19 season. Now, you know, best one of the best quarterback seasons of all time. So you never know. But we saw some things that just didn't – the panic, you know, we saw it at Tennessee, against Tennessee, and then the play at Missouri. When that happened, you know, the whole game changed in the last 2 minutes of a night game, which means I had to write a column in about 5 minutes. And guess what? It was easy because the story was told. I mean, the Jackson Arnold era is over that night in Columbia. When that happened, give him a game because a quarterback doesn't hang on to the ball in the last 30 seconds. And that was the end. So people want to beat him, but there's no real rancor from the fans. I just think they're just glad they got a guy that looks like he's going to be a lot better.
I did catch what Brent Venables said about Jackson Arnold, and everything you said to me is correct. Like, most coaches don't speak that highly of former players, but I'll take it a step further. Most coaches also don't say it wasn't even his fault, his failings.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
I mean, he's
right.
He's putting it on himself.
That's right.
He's putting it on
that's
his
right.
program.
Well, and Jackson's defense, let's see, he started he played significant minutes in 12 Oklahoma football games. The end of the 23 season, where he quarterbacked the bowl game, and he came in the second half of Brigham Young game when Dylan Gabriel got hurt and. OU was a little ahead, but Jackson got him to victory. And then the rest of the – and then the 24 regular season. In those 12 games, he had three offensive coordinators. Now, the NFL goes through stuff like that a lot. You know, Baker Mayfield, what was it, five or six – first 6 years in the league, six offensive coordinators. So it's not unheard of, but that for a young quarterback, that's not good. And he had – that's what Jackson had to go through. So – Hugh Freeze is clearly an established offensive coach, knows what he's doing. So there's reason to think Jackson can go to Auburn and not just survive but thrive. However, he does have turnover tendencies that really have nothing to do. When you just drop the ball in a scramble mode, that's not on anybody except you. So the Jackson-Arnold story is not clear to me. I don't know what will happen.
Now, I normally wouldn't even ask this question because I know Oklahoma, how financially sound they are, but with Brent Venables' massive buyout, the fact that you got to pay the players now, is Oklahoma even in a position to let him go and pay that buyout and, you know, all the money it would take to get a new coach and keep playing the players? I mean, how tough of a spot is Oklahoma financially if they had to make that decision?
Well, I've been asking the same thing. I don't see any way unless the bottom falls out. I mean, I don't know how you can change a coach in this day and age. It's $35 million, and I assume that's payable by year, so $7 million for 5 years. But, I mean, you can go get a lot of ball players for $7 million a year. Guess what? Don't fire Brent and spend that $7 million. If you got it, spend it extra on talent, and guess what? Brent Venables is a lot better coach all of a sudden.
So, the Billy Napier approach.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. I mean, I just don't understand the mindset that says, well, you just got to pay the buyout. I don't understand giving the buyout in the first place. Hopefully that's about to end. College athletic directors, they just don't seem to, and maybe it's university presidents, legal counsels, whoever's involved. I don't think, they keep saying that's what the market demands. I don't think they understand what the market means. There's way more good football coaches in America than there are premier coaching jobs. I mean, there's not. We've got, 68? I think it's, is it, 68 or 69 you know, in the power conferences, and then 32 NFL. We got 100 really good jobs in America. You think there's 100 really good football coaches in America? No, there's way more than that. So why are you, if some guy doesn't want the job, guess what? Somebody else will. And there's no secret that, you know, we know this is the greatest guy. You know, if it's Nick Saban or Urban Meyer, knock yourself out. But if it's Brent Venables, don't give him a $35 million buyout. I don't understand it.
I'm right there with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I was looking at talk about something I don't understand. I don't understand why we're going to Temple this year, but I am curious if you know, the eight, nine, that's gone back and forth. And we've done shows where we're like, okay, this is the three that they need. But Oklahoma has always been the one like, hell, I don't know what those three would be. If they gave you the captain seat and you got to pick Oklahoma's three permanent rivals, which one would they be?
Well, I mean, I think it needs to be Texas and Missouri makes sense. Arkansas would be great for Oklahomans. I actually went through Springdale. I didn't go through Fayetteville, but Springdale's the city right there that abuts Fayetteville. I went through it 2 or 3 weeks ago. I hadn't been there in years, but I was coming home from the Ozarks, and I went that way. It's stunning how quick you can get from Fayetteville to Norman, Oklahoma. My 15-and-a-half-year-old granddaughter drove me the last 150 miles because I was tired, and she agreed to drive, and she just drove us all the way home. And, you know, she's not a reckless driver, but we made it fast. I mean, it's close. It's close. But Arkansas's rivals clearly need to be Missouri, A&M, and Texas just because of history and geography. So I think Arkansas's off the list. So I think it's Missouri and Texas. And then it's a toss-up between LSU because the Tigers sort of need one in that, you know, and Florida, same way. The geography doesn't work at all. But, you know, the models that I used to run and other people have, it looks like Florida would be the one you'd pick. Doesn't really – they've never played except in, you know, in the bowl game. And
it was a good game, though.
It was a really good game. It was all kinds of ramifications. But you also, you know, it's a long way. But it just sort of fits. Florida needs somebody in that slot, somebody – you know, traditional power. Oklahoma, same way. Probably makes the most sense if it's Florida. So we'll see.
Now, I recall the end of Oklahoma's last football season, of course, losing the bowl game to Navy, and vast majority of fans were out. You know, this is doom and gloom down on the Sooners. But we are new to the Sooners, essentially, a couple years in, paying attention to the football program. They seem just like the rest of the SEC. Off season, we're all undefeated. Optimism reigns supreme. Now, I think Oklahoma's got legitimate reasons to be optimistic. A lot has changed, but do you think it's fair that these Oklahoma fans are so optimistic heading into this year, given the end of last year?
Yeah, I do, because I think the defense is really solid, really good. I think they're going to be probably better even than they were a year ago. I mean, I know everybody worried about Bowman and Stutzman moving on, but they got a lot of good players, and they got a lot of good players back. So the defense is really good, and we'll keep them in games. And they're not just riding on hope for the offense to be better, right? I mean, I'm not the one doing the athletic quarterback rankings. Nobody from Oklahoma is doing the athletic quarterback rankings. Since we've been down here in Atlanta, they got Mateer number 4 in America, you know, the number 4 quarterback. I don't know if he's that good. But there's people that think he's going to be great. And Ben Arbuckle, new offensive coordinator, that's actually sort of it's a lot like the Lincoln Riley model. You know, I mean, when he coordinated his first Oklahoma game, his previous game was East Carolina against Temple or somebody. I can't remember who. And, you know, just because Arbuckle's been at Washington State doesn't mean he doesn't know what he's doing. He's very young. West Texas guy, it's the Lincoln Riley story, really. So there's reason for that kind of optimism. So I can understand it. The schedule, to me, the schedule is the biggest story, though. There's no room for error. You know, the Sooners got no breaks on the schedule. You know, they got the tough side. Hopefully it pays off the next 2 years. But and there's no reason not to be optimistic, you know, if you're a fan. What's the alternative? Be pessimistic and just wake up in a bad mood every day? You might as well get excited. I don't know.
You know, well, they are here on Kentucky, Arkansas all day. I mean, some of those people are.
you guys know a lot more about this. How come they don't put Alabama in the Thursday afternoon time slot? That keep everybody here and everybody excited. I never have understood that. That's why in the Big 12, when we do either 2 or 3 days, we've done them both, it always put Texas on, tried to, Texas or Oklahoma, but primarily Texas on the last day. Keep everybody there and excited.
No, we do it opposite. We try to weed out the people that are not as serious. Oh, don't want to
yeah.
be. A lot of these people
yeah,
want to go
that's
home.
Right.
And
oh yeah, we got the diehards.
I was telling Mike, it's a lot like when Saban got onto the fans for leaving at halftime. The yeah. kids, you know, I'm looking around, all the Bamas are gone.
Yeah,
know?
Well, like Eli Drinkwitz gets up this morning and says something like, "Well, you know, thanks to all 14 of you that are still here." And I wanted to say, "Hey, Eli, you're preaching to the people that came to church. Save that message for the people who didn't come." But no, it's been fun. It's been a fun deal, and I needed a easy day because dang it, the two teams I care about the most, Oklahoma and Texas, they got the last slot the last 2 days, which means I'm working till 6 or 7 o'clock. My office has said, "Hey, let's go." Where's it? So today's going. I needed an easy day, so I appreciate the. And I'm trying to catch a flight at 8:55 tonight. So I appreciate the SEC schedule here at least on the last day.
Last thing I've got for you, and we'll go with that note. Drink came out there, said a lot of crazy things that people agreed with, didn't disagree with. But one of the ones that's kind of just got legs and taken off is, and he even said it on our show, he thinks they should expand to 30 teams. Is this – What are your thoughts on an expansion of that magnitude in college football?
Well, I think it's silly. We can't find enough dates to play 16 teams, and he wants to play 30 or 32. Was it Leach that came out and said, "Let's just let everybody in, play 128? I think he literally said that. He said, "Let's have a 128-team bracket." There's something interesting. You know, he basically endorsed the Big Ten model of let's play some qualifying games. And you know what? That would be a fun Saturday if the, you know, 8-3 play and 2-7 and 3-6 or whatever it is. That would be a fun Saturday. But we spend way too much time talking about the playoff and its format. Way too much time. People, I don't think, understand the illness of college football, which is the regular season is not near as good as everybody says it is. The SEC plays only 8 conference games, right? That means 4 non-conference games, and 2 or 3 teams are playing playing 2 legitimate non-conference opponents. The rest are just playing 1. Oklahoma's playing Temple, Kent State, and Illinois State. Illinois State, 1AA, might be the best of those 3. I mean, Temple stinks, and Kent State's the worst FBS team. Literally, they're terrible. That's 3 out of 12. That's 25% of the season is exhibition. Literally. And that's most of the way it is in the SEC and other conferences too. But when 25% of the SEC games are games you don't want to watch, you don't care about, you know what's going to happen – I wish that's what we would treat and talk about and do something about. You know, I got all fired up when I heard Drinkwitz say he wanted to play 9 conference games, and then we got to talking about the rivalries, and you know, I give it up to Arkansas. Poor Sam Pittman, they gave him a tough schedule. It's tough in the conference, and then he's got to play Notre Dame and at Memphis. I mean, that's a team that can beat you, and it's right there on the border. So I want to see more good games. You know, I was doing a lot of research about Kansas-Missouri rivalry today, which I knew a lot about it, but I refreshed myself. And wouldn't it be cool if everybody just played good games? Guess who the Kent State Golden Flash or Golden Flames or whatever they are? Guess who they don't play? They don't play the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Tampa Bay's got to play somebody good every Sunday. Now, the worst team in the league can beat you. How much fun would that be if we played a 9 con? Who was it? Somebody in the Big 12 came up with a – it was Kalani Sitake at BYU. He came up with a great idea. He said, I want to play 9 conference games and then play one game a year, one game each year against all 3 of the other conferences. I want to play a Big Ten team, an SEC team, an ACC team. What a schedule we'd have then. Every game's good. And yet, here comes Tennessee Tech and Illinois State and all these teams, you know, riding down the lane. And the poor people on the – I feel sorry for ESPN and SEC Network because those guys got to show highlights and talk about the game as if it was a real athletic event. You know, the Big 12's gone into business with the World Wrestling Entertainment, WWE. And I said, why is an athletic operation going into business with something that's fake sports? Why would you even want your name associated with that?
And even worse, instead of going in that direction, we lose treasured games like Bedlam.
Yeah.
So I have to ask you about Bedlam. Yeah. When will that game, if ever, return? Are we waiting for Mike Gundy to retire?
Long time. It's not a Gundy deal. No. It's a long time.
But, I mean, it's the fans that truly suffer without games like that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Now, OSU's a little bit of a different deal because I don't detect that even the OSU fans want to play. Coaches don't play. Administrators don't. The only people that really want to play from Oklahoma State are the players. I think the players would like it. But you're right. A&M in Texas is just getting back. Pitt in West Virginia is just getting back. BYU Utah is just getting back. What kind of a world do we live in when Brigham Young and Utah aren't going to play a football game in a year? How do we get to the point where that would even be talked about? That's the holy war. I mean, they live for that game, and it's madness. You just want to grab people by the collar, the decision makers, and say, "What are you guys doing? Why are we not?" You know, I go back to the team that always comes to my mind. You know, there's two, but Missouri in the 1970s. If you got a slow day someday, go back and look at Missouri's non-conference schedules in the 1970s. It will blow the eyeballs out of your head. I mean, they beat, I think it was Alabama and Ohio State in 1975, or maybe in 76, but in the mid-70s, they beat Alabama and Ohio State in the same season and went 6-5. They're playing 4 great non-conference games, and every game's a wild, and it was just the best show on earth. Colorado won the national title in 1990, when they had to share it with Georgia Tech, which was an absurd thing. They went 10-1-1, and they played 4 big-time games, non-conference, and all 4 were like either won their conference or tied for their conference. They played Illinois the year Illinois went to the Rose Bowl, and they played, I can't remember, but Texas, they played Texas non-conference that year. Everybody they played was good, and it was great football. In 1992, OU played Arkansas State. No, I'm sorry. 2000, they played Arkansas State. And I wrote that it was an immoral matchup. And it's the only time in 27 years of me covering Joe Castiglione that he was legitimately mad at me. I mean, I saw him, the next time I saw him, he wouldn't even speak to me. He wouldn't even look at me. He was peed. And maybe it was over the top. But in some ways, I mean, that in 2000, it was just crazy to me that Oklahoma would play Arkansas State. What are we doing there? Now, of course, Arkansas State would be at least their third non-worst game, at least. I mean, our standards have fallen so far. I don't understand it. I do understand it. It's more home games. Coaches want victories over everything else. But it's just a shame. So the colleges can get away with it. You know why they can get away with it? Because we got so many games. You know, we got 68 in September. We got not a lot of conference games. So every Saturday there's a bunch of good games, but there's just not enough, you know, but 1/3 of the games are good games and 2/3 just stink.
It just seems like they can't avoid it. I mean, I know we've been putting it off with words that guaranteed playoff spots and stuff, but at the end of the day, Disney's driving this bus, yeah, and they're going to want more games,
well,
I would imagine.
I keep waiting for ESPN to come to the rescue and just say, you know what? Knock yourself out with Illinois State. have a good time with Temple. You know, beat Kent State 84-0. We're just not going to be in that business, though. You guys just televise it yourself. We don't want to. We're not going to show that. Nobody wants to see that.
Yeah, I've never thought about it quite like that, but it could easily been. You know, they are also partnered with ACC. Make SEC and ACC play more. If they already own the rights, force them to play each other. It would be a much better product, and it would make the playoff rankings a lot easier to do as well.
The committee was absurd in 2024, just a bunch of dolts. But we don't give them a lot to work with when it comes to conference comparisons. That's what you're saying. We don't get that many games we can compare.
More data, points.
Yeah. And you, at the end of the day, you end up thinking Penn State's great when it's pretty clear they weren't. So, it would be better. You know, college basketball, of course, they play a lot more games, but they got a lot more information to compare. And in football, it's just so difficult, and it'd just be a better sport. And in some ways, it was a better sport. We love how this game has gone, but go back. In the 1970s, Oklahoma played 40 non-conference games. 36 of those 40 games were against teams teams we would now call power conference teams, either in a power conference or major independent, because there's a bunch of independents. But one of the four they didn't play was Tulsa, an in-state rival. You know, you want to play in-state team. But and now you look at it, and you know, people talk about the SEC going to 9. I worry about them going back to 7. That's what I worry about. I'd take it as a victory if they stay at 8. The committee gave them no incentive to play tougher games. The committee basically said, don't lose. You want to impress us? Don't lose. Well, you know how you can not lose? Play Alabama A&M and you won't lose. And it's hard to blame the schools when they don't get the incentive that they need. So I don't know. So whatever they do, I'm good. I'm going to watch every playoff game. That's what my commitment is. I'll watch every playoff game. But there's some September games, you know, I just don't care about it. So.
Well, Barry, this has been fantastic. Thank you for all the time. I got to ask you this, though. We are presenting sponsor by MyBookie all week. So everybody that sits down, we're asking them for their MyBookie boldest take for the upcoming season. Could be Oklahoma related. Could be anything in the SEC.
Boldest
related.
Take.
Got one for us?
Boldest take. Well, it'd be an idiot to do it in the SEC because those games are fairly. We sort of know what we're getting. You know, I don't think Tennessee's going to win the SEC with that dude from Appalachian State at quarterback. I think Texas Tech could actually cause a lot of problems this year. I think they got a chance to be really good. So if you're looking for a team that goes deep in the playoffs, semifinals type deal, Texas Tech, I think, might be the team you want to jump on.
Fantastic. All right, Barry, before you go, tell our audience how to follow you, how to find your work.
I'm at the Tulsa World, so TulsaWorld.com. I'm all over that. You can find me on Twitter, but I hate going on Twitter, so I don't know why I'd ask you to go on there. So just go to TulsaWorld.com, and they should have me fairly prominently. And if they don't, I'll go home and have a meeting with them. So, all right, you guys have a good time.